Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Misfit Mage and His Dashing Devil by M. N. Bennett, narrated by Simon Dornay. 1. Walter.
You need to slide back onto it, otherwise...
I know,
I gulped. This wasn't a big deal. I'd done this plenty of times before. In fact, I'd been doing this a lot longer than Ian, yet somehow... he'd gained far more experience. Come on, Wally. Ian's breath licked my ear, sweet and soft. His hand gripped my hip, pulling me closer to his waist, and I willingly slid toward him because the idea of my back pressed to his chest sent a quiver through my body. This entire thing was exciting. Well, nerve-wracking, but... in a wonderfully distracting sort of way. It won't hurt, promise. I'm not worried about that. My ears burned. Okay, I was a little worried about the pain, something which often made me hesitate. But mostly, my calves ached from holding this straddled position. It's just I don't want someone walking down the trail and catching us. No one ever walks down these trails.
Ian moved his hand, sliding it from my hip and planting it firmly on my abdomen. Besides, you shouldn't be embarrassed. All anyone would see is a rock star with some amazing moves. My stomach clenched, and I buried the rush fluttering from that simple touch that evoked so much curiosity.
You're not helping.
Ian shushed himself, clicking his tongue against the roof of his mouth as if to mimic locking his lips. I ignored the urge to ensure no one was wandering down the nearby trails to soak in the beautiful luminescent lights radiating off each portal in the dimensional atrium. I loved it here. The way everything, even the blades of grass, bounced the lights like endless mirrors casting serene warmth. Doorways linked here to every magical location throughout the state, allowing mages and mythics alike quick access, as long as they had clearance. Fey magics stirred in this pocket realm, illuminated by a dimly pink and orange sun and rainbow-painted moon. They were each frozen here, high above the purplish-blue sky, with the lights of various portals bouncing off them to brighten everything in enchanted colors. The calming comfort of this place pushed away my jitters, and I focused.
That's it. Now, get a firm grip and...
I vaguely remember showing you how saturation works. My toes curled, anxious and uncertain, as I held the wooden broom we straddled, imbuing it with mana until the sigils covering the stick glowed. I hated flying. I'd often either fail to lift off or fall flat on my face, and either way, it was embarrassing. Almost as embarrassing as Ian assisting me with practice for an exam I'd failed more times than I could count. Ian had never attended an academy, yet impressed everyone during his apprenticeship and aced the practitioner exam on his first attempt. Meanwhile, I hadn't mastered one single magic. When Ian offered to help me practice for the exam, it seemed like a great idea. A real win-win situation. I'd known him for a while and really enjoyed his company. He liked hanging out with me. Maybe. Probably. Most likely. It wasn't like he knew too many people in Seattle, and even fewer mages or mythics when he'd arrived. Still, I wanted to figure out if his nice nature and touchy-feely assistance were how he acted with everyone, or if there was a spark there.
You'll want to steady that charge.
Huh?
Ian stroked the broom handle, evenly distributing the saturation of mana I'd imbued.
Come on, that was clearly suggestive as fuck. Or I'd done what I always did. Overanalyzed every tiny detail, searching for any cue that led to the answer I wanted. My breath hitched, but I stabilized my mana. I hadn't quite lifted off, and had already screwed up a core fundamental of imbuing mage tools,
which meant taking the magical residue within myself, coursing as mana, and saturating the sigils with a proper charge. Too much in one or too little in another would cause the mana to erupt in unexpected ways. With a broom, it usually involved getting bucked off like riding a raging bull. I wobbled, legs dangling, and very much wanted to quit before I made an even bigger fool out of myself. Ian kept a hand on the broom, and arm wrapped around me as we lifted off the ground.
"Come on," Ian whispered. "I want you to show me all the best views here in the atrium."
"You probably have more time to visit this place than me." Between work and working after hours and avoiding practicing for an exam I'd fail again, I rarely made my way to the atrium anymore. It was more of a headache finding the time to visit. But as a professional practitioner in the Sentinel Regiment, Ian made use of the portals daily for work. I shook away the self-doubt, self-loathing, self-what-the-fuck-ever, because I wanted to make the most of this practice. We floated high above the sigillaria trees lining the trail, their trunks glittering with lights all the way to their forked branches and majestic leaves. It was hard to know if these looked anything like the actual extinct trees, but every plant and animal dwelling in the dimensional atrium came from a species long lost, forgotten, or eradicated by humanity. The Fae preserved them here. They preserved everything in their many vast realms. It was nice having access to this little pocket reality they shared with mages. Sticking to the woodland trails, I jerked and weaved around branches. My broom sputtered, zipping quickly and then halting because my saturation continued faltering. "Sorry, having a bit of trouble."
"Relax."
Ian rested his chin on my shoulder, pressing his cheek to mine to guide my line of vision.
"Enjoy the view, and try not to overthink the magic."
I turned willingly, assuming he wanted to glimpse the Fae patrolling this territory, something I had tried doing for years. Occasionally I'd see one in the corner of my eye, but they were nothing more than a glare in my glasses, since they refused to be observed, determined to remain the observers. But it wasn't the Fae that piqued his interest. A herd of Pyrenean ibex grazed at the edges of rocky terrain, their horns coated in gold and silver, which didn't look anything like the species in recorded history. "Not sure if the Fae modified them through recreation magic or a mix of doppelganger cloning," I explained. "But the Pyrenean ibex don't actually gather in those patterns, and while their fur is likely altered due to the discoloration here, they had much shorter coats. Their horns also, obviously, don't shimmer with metallic sheen, but it's the odd curvatures that really make it apparent how much the Fae decided what they liked about the original species versus what they sought to alter." Wind whistling in my ear was the only sound as I took a breath, pausing my over-explanation of what Ian likely found to be cute, goat-like critters. I preferred the truth of things, studying the historical relevance and understanding the ins and outs of how something worked, which might have been off-putting. Okay, definitely off-putting.
"Wally!"
Ian's shout startled my attention back to our course, where we were about to collide with an oncoming tree. No, not oncoming. That'd involve the tree moving. No, we were the ones moving. Me. I was the one directing this crashing flight as we descended lower on the trail toward a cluster of trees too thick to avoid. Pouring mana into the broom with saturation only sped our impending collision, because the sigils fueling speed instead of lifting glowed brighter, and once again I'd proven I couldn't do anything right. Ian wrapped his fingers over mine, yanking the broom back and altering our direction. A gust of wind burst, very much not a natural anomaly, but a sign of Ian's precision over elemental magic, even though he was a clear water sign, which helped push us up and over the thorny bristles of long-forgotten trees.
"I'm sorry."
I trembled, unable to shake away the dread. "I suck at this."
I suck at everything.
Chill.
Ian steered the broom to the ground from behind me. I was too frazzled to concentrate, so I let him take over, since he had a knack for what I never did.
You don't suck.
I do. I suck a lot. Ian snorted as we descended.
Are you beating yourself up or bragging?
Huh? What do you mean? I slid forward off the broom, finding my footing with shaky legs.
Think about it.
I huffed. Not what I meant.
Too bad.
Ian winked. That was a sign. Or debris from our flight caught in his eye, forcing a one-eyed blink to remove the obstruction, which was totally feasible and far more likely than him flirting with me during a practice flight in which I almost crashed. Still, his bright blue eyes and long lashes were worth staring at for investigative purposes. He stretched his back, arching until his tight black tee lifted slightly, revealing his abdomen. I turned.
You've got to get out of your own head, he said. You know more about magic than anyone I've ever met.
That was true. Not in a braggart way. I knew literally everything there was to know. What I didn't know, I studied, learned, and taught to anyone willing to listen. A relatively short list, which mainly involved the Magus, who only kept me employed since I comprehended the theory of magic, mana, and mythics better than most. If only I could apply theory to practice, I wouldn't be outdone by a guy like Ian, who didn't come from a mage lineage. Ian didn't learn about the mythic world until he was 25, when he witnessed magic in use and retained the memories after sentinels failed to glamour away the event. We were the same age, yet he'd adapted quickly to mage society, rose through the ranks, and went from apprentice to practitioner in an official regiment well within a year of training. Ian was practically chosen for greatness, stumbling onto his destiny, while I couldn't manifest mine despite years of effort. Further proof that what a person knew mattered significantly less than how they applied that understanding. I'd had my entire life to practice and study, yet remained an apprentice for the Archivist Regiment. It all boiled down to filing practitioners' findings, instead of being permitted to go explore and research my own. I fidgeted, searching for the right thing to say to Ian. A thank you for his time, for saving me, for believing in me, even if I had an annoying tendency to whine. Instead, I remained silent, absorbing Dolan's Crossing, where all the portals in the vast dimensional atrium converged. Not only had Ian steadied my mana and avoided crashing, but he'd also taken us back to the entryway. Portals glowed, and practitioner mages utilized the doorways to skirt through quickly from one place to the next, walking over the constructed stone pathways, none savoring the beauty of this realm. It was day to day for them, and so few explored the many facets this pocket reality offered. Ironic, considering Dolan meant wanderer. All I wanted was to wander and study everything about the mythic world up close, which I could only truly do with a practitioner title. Go on excavations for magical artifacts, immerse myself in mythic society, unravel the secrets of diabolics, something few knew because, while they lingered near our world, it was rare that they tore the dimension separating us asunder. To say I held a fascination for everything magical was an understatement.
You okay?
Ian nudged my shoulder with his. Another comforting sensation that sent every synapse firing off wild ideas. Fine. Just realizing my lunch break is almost over and I have to get back to work. I headed toward the portals before I made a bigger fool out of myself. Thank you again. I'll have to pay you back sometime, for your time.
Wait.
Ian moved in close. Too close. His lips practically touched mine, and the entire dimensional atrium faded away.
The carefully cultivated aromas the Fae kept well despite all the foliage and fauna cohabitating in this dwelling were washed away beneath the powerful citrus cologne Ian wore. It held a strong musk of sweetness and spice that left me entranced. His Adam's apple bulged as he swallowed. His eyes locked on mine, and his lip quivered ever so until he smiled.
Yes?
Sorry. Ian backstepped, boyish and nervous and almost as fidgety as me. I've been trying to play it cool for weeks now. Casual when I see you in the museum, which almost never happens. But then you needed a study buddy, and I thought it'd be a great chance to hang out. But now you're off to the repository again. Where I spent almost all my time. That, or locked away in my room studying for an exam I never passed. Why apologize? I did my best to keep my face from making any frantic or curious or shocked responses, fighting to not appear hopeful because I could very well be misinterpreting where I thought this discussion was heading, something I did too often. I've sort of been dropping hints, hoping you'd ask me out. Not that you need to ask me out, I can very much do the asking, just wasn't sure if you were interested. And then you needed help with the exam, and it felt weird asking, like, hey, I'll help you, but only if you go out with me, which is slightly creepy, and not the vibe I wanted, but I sort of, I don't know. Ian's lips pulled into a tight smile. I wanted to ask. Unless this is a platonic vibe, and I've gone and ruined it with a crush. Crush. He said, crush. Ian had been thinking about me as much, or close to, as I'd thought about him. And he had dropped cues. Not entirely platonic or creepy at all. I cleared my throat, desperate to buy time in my response and bury any rambling words that wanted to find their way out of my mouth. I hadn't really given it much thought because I've been so behind on work. Seriously, the Magus has us processing 1,000 different artifacts a month these days, which is like 10 times the usual workload. And then I've been focused on the exam. It's coming up soon, and the next one is 3 months away, which I know because I've already signed up for that one too, in case I fail this one, which is a terrible way to prepare for success, always planning on the contingency of failure, I know, but I try to think of it as proactive, which is why I haven't given you much thought. I mean, I have thought, think, about you in a normal amount of ways that are both platonic and non-platonic. Why couldn't I shut up? This was me tragically attempting to play it cool, not working. If a diabolic could just leap through one of these portals and rip my tongue out of my mouth so I'd stop making an utter fool out of myself, that'd be wonderful. A blessing. And yet, I had the overpowering desire to clarify what really didn't need more clarification. I've thought about you. But sometimes I overthink things, which you might have noticed or recall me mentioning multiple times because I have this tendency to properly and thoroughly and fully explain. Would you like to go on a date? Ian interjected, his voice steady and confident, leaving my entire body ready to collapse into a puddle of insecurity. It'd be a group setting. A few sentinels I work with are heading to this mythic bar. Apparently it's really fun. Plus, even though they have hired mages working to handle any humans who waltz in and glimpse magic, I've heard a lot of the patron practitioners assist with glamoring. We could drink, chat, and practice our magic. A win-win-win situation. Because my glamoring was even worse than my saturation. Exactly. Ian rubbed the back of his head, tousling his shaggy brown hair. Which, to clarify, was how I intended on leading this discussion, but then you bolted off and got all rambly. My entire body vibrated. I resisted the urge to say the same thing, because if he could overlook my babbling, I would gladly not remind him of it. So, a group date? That was the intention. Casually ask you, hang out with some other folks, maybe break away from the group and see how things go. That sounds like a fun, casual, cool, pleasant time. My cheeks twitched as I forced a smile and held back a dozen other comparative words. "When were you thinking?"
"Tonight."
"Tonight?" I gulped.
"Unless you plan on locking yourself in that repository all night."
"No, I'm very much leaving on time today. 6 o'clock. I often worked extra hours to help the archivist practitioners catalog their findings, handing out free labor in hopes it'd offer some advantage. After 3 years in the repository department, the only advantage it had given me was back pain, exhaustion, and a dirty apartment I lacked the energy to clean.
"Perfect. That gives you plenty of time to meet us at 7.
Ian strolled toward a glittering green portal, a definite swagger in his step.
"In the meantime, I'd say we both went over on our lunch break. You think I can blame traffic, or do these things pretty much nullify that excuse?"
He scanned his badge and hopped through the portal.
"Wait!"
He never said where to meet him. My pocket buzzed.
"Ian, I'll text you the details."
I approached a crimson portal leading back to the Magus estate, beaming at the text message and attempting something polite in response. I reached into my pocket to fish out my badge, and dread consumed me. It was missing. Shit. I patted myself down. An open portal wouldn't take a person anywhere without the proper clearance, thanks to how everything magical became so entwined with technology, adding extra measures in security. A truly amazing thing that I loved, but I'd lost the only thing offering me access to the repository. It could be anywhere in the dimensional atrium, which would take hours to search. The Magus would kill me. Searching every pocket 3 times over, I finally felt it tucked inside my back pocket and took a calming breath. Weird. I must have been so frazzled meeting with Ian, I stuffed it in my back pocket. So outside my routine. But all of this was outside my routine. That was the point. Become a practitioner so I could escape the mundane routine of filing amazing work and join the archivist regiment to actually find my own. And if this date with Ian led to dating, which turned into something potentially romantically awesome, that'd be a cool change in routine, too.
2. Beelzebub. An irritating off-rhythm buzz had joined the flicker from the light on the ceiling nearest my prison. Orb. Whatever. A tiny little ball in a huge room. For 2 solid weeks, that damn bulb had blinked erratically, slowly dying, like myself. Only when it died, I'd have a reprieve from the glare of brightly colored incantation symbols warding every lackluster artifact in this sterile white room. What I wouldn't give to rip apart everything in here, feel it all crumble to dust in my grasp. Ah, to feel again, to taste, even smell. It was hard to know if my smell was intact, or if I'd simply grown numb to this sterilized environment. I still possessed sight and hearing, 2 senses I'd gladly surrender because of that incessant goddamn light bulb. I sighed, perhaps. Not like I could feel, let alone fathom, any reactions my own body gave as a discombobulated fraction of my former self. I couldn't do anything trapped inside this orb, placed above the artifacts high on a mantle inside this repository. Unable to cover my ears or close my eyes, I suffered alone, observing everything. Always aware, yet with nothing to do. The door beeped, and worthless Walter, my daily companion, returned from his lunch. Shockingly, his bleach-marked blue polo didn't have any new condiment stains. His clumsiness was truly tragic.
Oh, how I enjoyed his presence this time of year. It was one of the few times his misery became so deeply entrenched in his being that every little thing filled him with trepidation. Such truly entertaining meltdowns. But he whistled some off-key tune, and a cheery pep in his step made his curly blonde hair bounce. The fuck? No, no, no! Walter had a practitioner exam coming up. I was sure of it. He'd complained ceaselessly since his form was approved. It was practically a sign of the changing of seasons. Summer had very much ended, and with fall settling in, Walter should be in full-blown dismay. Every 3 months he'd attempt that practitioner exam like clockwork, and every 3 months he'd be defeated by it. Unable to master any of the 5 pentacles of power all mages possessed. It left him devastated, utterly destroyed, emotionally eviscerated. It became one of my few delights to look forward to in this hellscape. Perhaps it stemmed from the whole misery loves company mantra, but I took solace in Walter's pointless plight. How had he gone and found a way to ruin what little happiness I cherished? "Okay," he said loudly, craning his neck to ensure no one else was in the repository. Few archivist practitioners lingered here if they could avoid it. "I've got exactly 4 hours and 56 minutes to finish today's agenda." Ugh, Walter and his auditory whatever. He'd explained it before, as with every single thing he did day to day, because it allowed him to process learning better. Of course, it annoyed the actual archivists who worked in the repository, so when they were around, he settled for mumbles. But he found himself alone this afternoon. Perhaps that was where this hollow joy came from. "I have to restock the basilisk eyes and harpy feathers, check to make sure the vanguards returned those brooms on loan. Oh, there were some sigils that needed double-checking. Then I need to finish filing Chancellor Alden's finding on the Fey Rift. She'll be pissed if I push that back another day." Walter tilted his head, his glasses slipping down the bridge of his nose and his hazel eyes trained on me. "But believe it or not, Bez, I plan on getting this all done in a timely fashion. That's right, I won't be spending my entire Friday night with you." Thank the gods for tiny mercies. The only thing worse than his need to verbalize all his work was this insufferable desire to make conversation with me during his 12-hour days, like I actually fucking heard a word he said. I mean, I did, but he had no reason to believe that. Plus, he rarely shut up, so I never kept up with his terrible discussions, or lessons. Fuck, he loved to teach me things I either already understood or had no desire to learn. Another beep at the door, and Walter quieted. "And who are you talking to, Wally?" My jailer, Magus Remington, hobbled into the repository. The wrinkles on his face deepened and spread like webbed crevices. He looked nothing like the mage nearly 50 years ago who helped bind me within this orb. I took small pleasure in knowing I'd outlive him. I'd outlive everything. Eternally bound to this horrid orb. However, given the time Remington recently dedicated to cataloging and moving so many artifacts in and out and elsewhere, I might luck out and get to watch the old bastard keel over and die in here. Huh? Walter's thick brows raised, adding to the worry lines on his crinkling forehead. Was I talking? Probably just thinking out loud. The tips of his ears reddened.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?